So before we embark on the discourse, we will look briefly at the text that it's about, which is the Ten Commandments. Right. So if you look at verse 1, we have here the Ten Commandments, which on Friday morning is going to be read in the synagogues around the world. Vayedaber Elokim et kol hadvarim ha'ele le'emor. God spoke all these words saying, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God, Asher hotzeiticha me'eretz Mitzrayim, who took you out of the land of Egypt, mi'beit avadim, from the house of bondage. Lo yiyelecha Elokim acherim el panai, you shouldn't have any other gods, and the rest of that several lines is all talking about not worshipping idols. Then in verse 7, it talks about not taking God's name in vain. Verse 8, 9 and 10 are talking about, and 11 are talking about keeping the Sabbath. Then verse 12, honoring one's parents. Verse 13, is there not to murder, not to commit adultery, not to steal, and not to give false witness, all in one verse, incidentally. And then verse 14, not lo tachmod, not to desire something that someone else has, whether it's his house, his wife, or anything else that he has, not to want something belonging to someone else. So there we have the basic Ten Commandments, which are the general principle of the entire Torah. The Torah is enormous. It's an amazing, it's just amazing what the Torah is. There are 24 books of the written Torah. There are 60 tractates of the oral Torah. Then you have the Babylonian Talmud exploring those 60 tractates which are in the Mishnah. And you have the Jerusalem Talmud as well. And then you have the Midrash. And then all these teachings are expressed in a sort of summary, so as to understand what we should do as a result of all these teachings. So you have the Rambam, Maimonides, Mishneh Torah, the Code of Law, and a sort of a stream of books concerning the actions in life, and a parallel stream of books concerning the feelings in life. So Chovot HaLevavot, the duties of the heart, was written by Bachya ibn Pakuda in Judeo-Arabic about 1,000 years ago, and he said, we know what the duties of the limbs are, but what about the duties of the heart? So he wrote a book about love of God and being aware of the oneness of God, and that stretches down. You could see Kabbalistic, Hasidic teachings in that line as well, as expressing what there is to feel. Hello, how are you? Thank you. This chain of teachings, but it all comes from the Ten Commandments. It all comes there from the Ten Commandments. That's the kernel. That's the heart of the entire of everything, and it's communicated in this tremendously intense way, which was so intense, as the Talmud tells us. That when we heard the words of the Ten Commandments from God, we expired. It was too much for us. We couldn't take it, as we read last night, and so we had to be revived with the dew of Torah, the dew which will in the future revive the dead. So there is this tremendous intensity of divine teaching coming to us, and now we're going to explore a discourse about that, which is the next couple of pages in. Now, this is a discourse which was said on the night of the 5th of Sivan, that means in the evening after Maariv, after the evening prayer, and the 5th of Sivan, of course, is Erev, is the eve of Shavuot. And it was said in 1989. 1989. It's 49 in the Hebrew. 5749 is the Hebrew date, and the English date is 1989. Now, 1989, said by the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and in 1988, his wife passed away. And once his wife passed away, he stopped saying discourses. He basically stopped saying discourses. Now, this is a very profound thing in itself. It happened before in the Chabad movement with the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, also called Menachem Mendel, who lived around 1850. When his wife passed away, he stopped saying discourses. You see, a discourse is a kind of linking in to a divine channel which flows from above, and for that to take place, reaching into this world in a total way, this is the way that I understand it, and I'm not saying something that I've read, it's just my own way of understanding it. Others may give a better or deeper understanding. But in order to bring this flow into this world, there has to be the totality. And so in the case of a great teacher, it is this totality of the person and his wife, and that makes the unit together, and then he's able to bring that flow into the world. And when she is passed away, so that means, if you put it in terms of Sfirot, that the Sfirah Malchut is like higher up now. It's not in the world. It's not the same channeling into the world. And so therefore, for the most part, he stopped saying discourses. He would sometimes say a discourse, or quite often, within something else that he was saying. And you would suddenly realize that the material was a discourse. But the idea of saying a discourse in this magnetic way, what's called a discourse with a nigun, a discourse with a tune, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzitzicha Meretz Mitzrayim, you know, the Rebbe would go into this sort of a mystical mode of communication. You could, as it were, you could feel the illumination flowing through. That basically stopped, except for one or two exceptions. And one exception was in 1989, before Pesach, there was a discourse about Pesach. And I remember being phoned up by a friend of mine who lived in Holland. He said, the Rebbe's saying a discourse, a maimer, with a nigun. Now, in fact, that time, the Rebbe suddenly said, sing the melody, sing the nigun. And they didn't know what he meant, and he meant the mimer melody, the melody of the mimer, which we sing here before we learn a mimer. And they began singing this, and my friend phoned me up from Holland. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that, London time. In America, it wasn't so late. It was 10. And it was after the Rebbe had been to the grave of the previous Rebbe. Then he came back, and then they davened Myris. And then came this mimer, and that was one discourse. And then the same year, before Shavuos, also the same thing. The Rebbe came back from the grave of the previous Rebbe. They davened Myrav, and he suddenly launched into this mimer. And this one I didn't hear. When my friend phoned me and told me the Rebbe saying a discourse, I immediately was, thank God, able to get a phone line somehow through from New York. There was a whole system of phone calls around the world. And when the Rebbe spoke, you were able to hear it literally in every Chabad center all over the world, and that had all been organized. And so I was able to hear the discourse. But this one I didn't hear. However, but here it is, we're studying it. So this is actually the last discourse the Rebbe said in the melody of a discourse. Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Seitircha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. I'm Hashem, your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt. The Pasuk Zeh Diburish and Aseres Hadibros. This is the first of the Ten Commandments. Shenitnu b'matan Torah b'vav Sivan, which were given at the giving of the Torah on the 6th of Sivan, la'achrei shigdim Yisrael naaseh l'nishma, after the time that the Jewish people had said, we will do, and only then we will hear. You see, that was an interesting thing about their preparations for receiving the Torah, which they said b'chamishi b'sivan, missing out the brackets, on the 5th of Sivan, they said, we will do everything that God says, we will do. And then later they said, we will hear, we will understand. So the commitment, that commitment that we are going to do whatever God tells us to do, whatever Hashem tells us to do, even before we know what it is and even before we understand it, that is a key step in the person being able to open his or her soul, you could say, to connect with God in such a way that this infusion, this input of the Torah comes into the person. We need a certain step which transcends us. Because most of our life we say, you know what, if I like it, then I'll do it. Tell me, yeah, maybe. And that's what being a normal person is. However, commitment is an extra dimension. And that extra dimension of commitment is that even if I don't like it, I don't know what I will like. Who knows whether what I like is a real understanding of what is right for me? I might like something and it might be unhealthy, it might be the wrong thing to do. I might not be aware. It's really an expression, we were talking before about humility. It's an expression of one's own awareness of how much we actually know, the sense of humility, that we don't know. And that's the way we are able to follow godliness, because we do not know, and we recognize that God is infinite. And we are, there is a phrase, V'ani ba v'lo eda, I am a brute, and I do not know. Behema hayisi imoch, I am like a behema, like an animal with you, God. V'ani tomid imoch, but I am always with you. So it's that ability to reach the level of simplicity within ourselves, which is like a behema. You know, let's imagine we're a, what kind of behema would a person like to be? A behema is basically a domestic animal. You know, it might be an ox. Well, a dog is really called a chaya. Imagine a very nice ox, which it goes, you know, a child can run an ox, you know, can manage an ox. I remember seeing in farmland, you know, like a little 5-year-old, you know, somehow, you know, and then this whole herd of oxen, you know, move up. So the ability to be obedient is a tremendous power in the behavior. What are you thinking?
No, when you first mentioned that, connected to what you're saying, what we were reading yesterday about Moses and touching the rock or something, with lack of obedience in that way. It's something, it didn't transcend, did it? Because you say, talk to the rock, speak to the rock, and your mind say, no, that's silly, I cannot speak to a rock. It's our mind, isn't it? You're not following what, he was not following what God said, just speak to the rock and...
Right, in a sense. In fact, what the sages tell us about that as well, if he had spoken to the rock, we would have said to ourselves, if the rock is obedient just when it's spoken to, so how much more so we should be obedient just when we're spoken to. But he didn't, and we don't.
I've got a big, big problem with obedience.
Yes, who hasn't?
I didn't see as obedience. I see in the way of transcending your rational mind. Because if you allow your rational mind to say, no, I cannot speak to a rock, it's not a question of being an order from God or something, but I see in the way of transcending a rational mind. You cannot speak to a rock, come on.
I have no problems with speaking to rocks.
I
speak to
I
have a different problem.
You haven't understood.
Go on, tell the problem of obedience.
The problem of obedience is the problem that Milgram studied, which I'm sure you know about, where people followed the authority
and authoritarianism, right,
and ended up giving what would have been lethal injections, and really the whole of the Nazi apparatus.
You understand?
Being obedient, but you're talking about obedient to something that can open up spirituality, but they could also rationalize it in this particular way.
You know, one of the problems in existence is that everything good and beautiful has a mirror image, mm-hmm. which is horrible. Mm-hmm. And that's so all the way through. In almost every area of life, we have this mirror image. Something beautiful and holy. And then there's a mirror image, horrible, ghastly, obscene. And it's there all the way through. And the same... Now, sometimes, because of that, we... As the English put it, we throw out the baby with the bathwater. So we're not going to have anything of it. So let's say, you know, it's probably not exactly true, but our picture of the Victorians is because they were so worried about immodesty, they threw everything out on that dimension.
Mm.
You know, I mean, they probably didn't, but, you know, that's the image of them. That's the caricature of them. And because of the problem in the 20th century, very obvious problems about obedience, with people saying, I was just following orders, that's why I killed a million children, you know, something like that. So, all obedience is out of the window as well. Now, the interesting thing here in Jewish teaching is that it's not just obedience. It's na'aseh, we will do. But, nishma. We will inquire. Mm. We will explore.
But Nishma is here, is not explore and inquire. That's the thing, because the quest here, or the request, is that you follow the mitzvot and you don't ask question why. Am I not correct?
Well, the way it's explained in Chabad, yes. You see, obviously there are lots of ways that we could understand this. One simple way is, Na'aseh, we will do, before Nishma we even hear what we're supposed to do. Yes, so you have to separate milk and meat. You have to follow the rules that I give you about cooking. Alright, I don't know what the rules are. Yes, I'll follow them. What do I have to do? Separate milk and meat. Okay, I'll separate milk and meat. I didn't know what they were going to say. That's the normal way of understanding it. But the Chabad way of understanding it is that na'aseh is the commitment to do whatever the Torah, the code of law, tells us to do, the Shulchan Aruch. And nishma is another dimension, is using one's mind and understanding and exploring. And the power to explore is a very important concept, because it's through exploring that one is able to internalize the command from God. There is a concept which is in the Talmud, which typifies superficial faith. Ganva apum machtarta, it's in Aramaic. The thief about to break in, Rachmana Karia, calls to God. So the thief is calling to God. He's a very pious thief, and he's calling to God, please God, help me. Now what's happening? He's doing something which is breaking the Torah. So he's got a kind of relationship with God, but it's completely superficial. It doesn't enter into his real action. And that is because he's never actually thought what it means that he has a relationship with God, and he hasn't been taught, he hasn't acquired neither the na'aseh, meaning don't steal so he's not going to steal, nor the nishma, the idea of thinking about it. And maybe he started off just with being told, do this and don't do that. And his father would give him a smack if he did anything wrong. And later on he became a Sikh. He broke away from all that. Whereas if instead of having the smack if he did something wrong, if he'd have had something explained to him and he'd have explored and been able to think more deeply about the whole meaning and what difference does it make if I do this or do that and why should God give us laws in the world? Why does God care that human beings behave in this? Why should God care whether I eat milk and meat or milk and meat separate? Why does that bother God? So, and you begin to explore that and you begin to see what is the meaning of the mitzvah and the whole significance of practical action in this world and the way it affects higher realms. So then he might not have been a thief after all, and that little line from the Talmud would have been missing. But as it is in the ordinary version, because that line only occurs in the Ein Yaakov version of the Talmud. You see, so the two texts of the Talmud, there's the regular text, the printed text, and the Ein Yaakov text. And the Ein Yaakov text has that line, and the ordinary text doesn't have that line. So
The Gemara says something similar anyway, doesn't it? I think somewhere. The Bavli says it.
Yeah, I mean...
But it's interesting. I just understood that, because there seems to be something special about this. Ma'asev and Ishmael, we will do and we will hear. Because the Midrash says that when the Jews said this, so the... who was it? So they said, how did they know? That's what the angels say.
Mi gala roza. Yeah, who revealed this secret?
A voice came out from heaven and said that. So
it's a secret. It's a spiritual secret that was somehow.
So it seemed to me. I mean, you can't just learn it, but you do something, whatever it is. You light the candles, and then you inquire, what does this mean, lighting the candles, right? First you experience, that's how you have to do the Jewish religion. First you do it, and then you try to understand what you're doing. Much in the same way, or not in the same way, but something similar is, if I want to teach you how to swim, and you're all sitting here around the table, I could teach you for 2 hours, 5 hours, 7 hours, that if you when you lie and you splash your arms around, you'll float. But it wouldn't make any difference if I talk to you for 2 hours or 4 hours, when you get in the water and you float, then you'll understand. You know,
right. So in other words, you have to jump in, and that's the action.
So it's something which you have to experience before you understand it. If you say, well, look, I'm not going to fall into bed in because is it really mystical? Isn't it mystical? You can spend a whole life discussing it and never doing it. Never do it. So the way you have to do it is jump into it, rather like swimming, and then you can discuss what you're experiencing.
I think that's a nice way of expressing it. Incidentally, the two lines that we missed out, one and a half lines, is that the angels came and gave to each Jew two crowns, one corresponding to we will do and the other corresponding to we will hear.
Why are you translating it as angels and not messengers when it's the same word?
Well,
why just conventionally is Monica. It being... Yes. Why is
well,
it
what kind of messenger? It's a spiritual messenger.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
You see, there are practical messengers as well, but someone.
But it's more than it's Malchei Hasharet. They are very elevated angels.
Yeah,
right.
There's a different word for messenger.
An ordinary messenger. Well, it's true that malach, but there's malach and shliach. There's different words. But as Amelia is saying, it's malachei hasharet, ministering angels. It's like a very exalt, something very very spiritual. Like if one reads in Yeshaya, the book of Isaiah, he speaks there about the angels, chapter 6, I think. There you have this whole vision of God surrounded by angels, as like the glory, it's an expression of the glory, the spiritual glory of God. And some aspect of that came and gave to each Jew, to each person, these two crowns. Now, all right, so there we have this event, this first line of the Ten Commandments. Umuva, we're now four lines down in the middle of the line. Umuva b'chama drushim. You got that? And it's quoted in many discourses that Rabbi Shein and the Siyenu of the previous Rebbeim. You see, the Rebbe is teaching as the seventh Rebbe, following in a whole series of seven Chabad Rebbeim, and then coming from the Baal Shem Tov, the Maggid of Meserich, and then going back into the Kabbalah and the Talmud and back to Mount Sinai. Hashayla, Hayadua de Gedol Yisrael, the well-known question asked by leading figures such as Ibn Ezra on the Chumash, Harebriyat Shemayim Ba'aretz Hupele Gadol Yoseh Miyatsiyas Mitzrayim, the creation of heaven and earth is a greater wonder than going out of Egypt. Why didn't God introduce himself by saying, I am the Lord your God who created heaven and earth? Why is it this aspect of I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt? The Biyatsiyas Mitzrayim, because in the going out of Egypt, Avshah you come on this, even though there were many miracles, Hare Noisef Rezesh Ein Zebiyamas, because Zesh Shoyim Asher Seisichim Eretz Mitzrayim Dafka. The fact there were many miracles in itself doesn't really answer the question why this should be pinpointed. Mekiven shegam koidim yitzis mitzrayim, v'chein la'achre yitzis mitzrayim, how you come and become a nisim. There were miracles before going out of Egypt, and there were miracles after. Right? Abraham and Sarah had a baby when they were both very old. So, and anyway, a miracle, what is a miracle? A miracle is changing something from something existing to something else. Change water into blood, right? So the water is there, it's being changed into blood. Changing dust into light. Where is the creation of heaven and earth? Hu yesh ma'ayin, is something from nothing. That's a completely different order of revelation of divine power. That suddenly heaven and earth come into existence and they weren't there at all before. The Big Bang. An amazing thing, that God was able to create something from nothing. And it's very interesting that science has come round after several millennia of people thinking that the world was eternal, that the universe is eternal. To a great extent, they've come round to say, yes, like it says in the Torah, Bereshit bara Elokim, in the beginning God created heaven and earth. So yes, there was a beginning. They call it the Big Bang, and discussions of how it came about. But there it is. It's a miraculous event, the idea of the beginning of creation. And eventually they will come to the idea that not only was it a Big Bang, but it was a Big Bang which then was followed by which is the when God said, let there be light, yihi or, which is this tremendous energy, and then everything that follows in the 6 days of creation until finally we have Adam and Eve created on the sixth day and then Shabbat. So
they just come out of Egypt, haven't they? So related to them to say, I'm the God who brought you out of Egypt.
All right.
And at the time of the creation, they weren't there.
Okay.
It's personalizing.
I brought out 2 points, really. First of all, they were there for Yetzias Mitzrayim, and they weren't there for the creation. And second of all, Yetzias Mitzrayim, if you like, was a Jewishness. It benefited the Jews, whereas the creation of the world benefited everybody.
Well, all right. Okay, you're giving a good excuse. We'll see.
I call it a reason.
We'll see how the discourse follows it. In fact, the general tenor of this discourse is not so much to answer the question as to say, you know what, it's a very good question, let's follow that idea about creation of heaven and earth, because a question in Torah is also part of Torah. So if you say why XYZ, you know, and you read in the Talmud or some great sage asks, you know, why XYZ, so you say, you know what, XYZ, that's also something valuable that we can look at and we can explore, because the answer to the question, there are further answers to the question. You see, Yehuda Halevi, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, he answers this question in a very subtle way. He says that for us, our relationship with God is not just that God is the source of existence. Our relationship with God is that He changes our lives. He comes into our lives. We were in Egypt, He takes us out of Egypt. And you could then use Hasidic teachings to say a person might be in their individual, personal Egypt, and God comes and rescues them from that. So you're right that it's the personal relationship all the way through, and it's not only something in the past, but something in the present and the future. God is continuously rescuing us from situations of spiritual or even physical limitation, and that we are gekvetscht in some way in Yiddish. We are crushed in some way. We are limited. Simpson, that's right. Yes, so some kind of way that we are in meitzarim, in the straits, min hametzar, from the narrow area, and God's the narrow place, and God takes us out to a broad place. So that could be an answer, but the way the discourse goes is to follow the idea of the creation of heaven and earth, as we'll see in a moment. So there's a further point. So this is five lines up from the end of this paragraph, quite right. In addition to the idea that creation of something from nothing is more wondrous, in other words, creation is more wondrous than going out of Egypt, also the divine life, the divine force which is in Bria Yesh Me'ayin, which is there in creating of something from nothing, who koyach naile yoseh, is a more exalted kind of power. To yudua shebria yesh me'ayin, as is known, that creation of something from nothing is hirak v'koyach ha'atzmus, is only from the power of the very essence of godliness, shemetziyuso matzmuso, that his existence is from his very essence. So, and the idea of physicality being there, something from nothing, comes from the very essence of God. This is a very fascinating idea, that that you could have several different levels of the spiritual, getting further and further and further to sort of lower and lower levels, but it would still be spiritual. How do you get physicality, which is actually opaque to godliness? Only the essence of God can create something which is opaque to godliness and which is a concealment of God. The missing out the brackets. So why? That is the old question. Why does it say, I'm God who took you out of Egypt? Because at first sight, it should have said, I'm God who created heaven and earth. Now we could add, this is chapter base. The fact that it's at first sight it seems it should have said, I am God who created heaven and earth, because creation of heaven and earth and the giving of the Torah, they relate to each other. Missing out the bracket. The Bria Shemaim Va'aretz Mischadeshes B'chol Rega V'rega, because the creation of heaven and earth is renewed every single moment. Ketores HaBaal Shem Tov, as the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, Al HaPosuk La'olam Hashem Dvorach HaNitzav V'Shemaim, forever God, O God, your word stands in heaven. And he says, Shekoyach HaLaki, that the divine power, Mahavet Tomid, is all the time giving existence, Es HaNivra Ma'ayin L'Yesh, to the created thing, that it should exist, something from nothing. In other words, when God created physicality, existence, as something from nothing, it wasn't a one-off event. He continuously is pouring spiritual energy into existence so that it should maintain itself. And the way that I think of this is that if you stop pouring that in, everything would just dissolve away in entropy. It would all go back to naught. Whereas it's like a picture on a video screen, that there has to be a constant input of energy so that you can see that picture. So is our universe. It is an image, a three-dimensional, four-dimensional, n-dimensional image, which God is continuously creating with an input of energy, of divine energy flowing from the essence of godliness, ultimately making this n-dimensional image of existence continue to exist. Since this creation and keeping in existence of something from nothing, of the whole existence of the universe, is in the power of the essence of God, Muvan, it's understood, Shahabriya Shabakov Regavarega, that the creation that is every single moment, he yeshma ayin, mamash me'atmos, it's something from nothing, actually coming from the very essence of God. Va'alderech zehu b'Torah. Now it's the same thing in the Torah. Shenesinoso v'ham shechosa hi me'atmos. Because the giving of the Torah and the giving over, the hamshacha, the flow of the Torah, the Torah is being given and then it pours down through the generations and through the teachings of the Torah to us. Hima atzmus, that comes from the very essence of God, like the very first word, this word in the brackets we will read, anochi, I. It's all coming from the I, the first person, so to speak, of godliness. He's giving himself to us in the Torah in a most amazing way. And in fact, the word Anochi spells a beautiful phrase in Aramaic, Ana, Navshoi, I myself, Kasavis, I have written, Yehovis, I have given. Ano nafshoi kasovis yehovis. I, myself, my very essence, kasovis, I've written, yehovis, and I've given. So God is actually writing down and giving himself to us in the Torah. It's the most tremendous giving of the very essence of godliness to us in the Torah. And so that is a flow from the very essence of godliness, from absolutely beyond. And the flow of Torah from the essence to b'chol rega is every moment. That's an incredible thing. It's all the time happening, this flow of Torah. It's flowing from God all the time, and any time that we latch into it, it's actually there. It's like we're receiving the signal. It's the most incredible thing. Because there is this Kamosha Kosov Noisen HaTorah. He gives the Torah. Every day one is supposed to make a blessing on the Torah. Blessed are you, O God, who's chosen us. Every man and woman, we're supposed to say this blessing every day. It's part of the Birchot HaShachar, the blessings of the morning. And we thank God for choosing us and giving us the Torah. And it doesn't say who gave us the Torah in the past, but who's giving it to us, not in that Torah Roshon Hove, giving it to us in the present. Shelachein Om Razal, because the sages say, Bechol Yom Yil Be'necha Chadoshim, every day the teachings of Torah should be new in your eyes, not just Kechadoshim, as if they were new, but Chadoshim Mamas, really new. And so that moment that the person is studying Torah, it should be as if he or she has just received it from Mount Sinai in a most incredible way. So therefore existence, which is all the time a flow from godliness, making this exist. As the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, he passed away in 1920. He was in Russia, and so there was a plate of fish on the table. And he said, this isn't fish. This is the word of God saying, Du soll sein fish. You should be fish. You think it's a material fish. It's godliness, which is saying, you should be fish, and there is the fish. And so all the time. I remember Rabbi Mendel Futterfuss, this great teacher. There's a picture of him on the wall. So he held something. There, he's that teacher. Can I just borrow this for a second? He said, he was like holding something. He said, Faran, something exists. That's an expression of God. The fact that anything exists, whatever it is that exists, that's an expression of God. And so this way of seeing, that the fact that any little thing that you see a leaf, you see a petal from a flower, a stone, that's an expression of godliness. So there is that in existence, and there's that in the Torah. Because any word of Torah is itself an expression of godliness. And it's there all the time, a pulsating expression of godliness which is there. It's as if the energy, you know, there's this idea that the Torah, the primeval Torah, was given as letters of black fire on the background of white fire. Torah HaKadumah. You know, and imagine as if our mind's eye, our soul's eye, is able to see when we look at a few words of Torah on a page or in a chumash, in a book, or in the Torah scroll, to see that pulsating fire of Torah which is there. And of course, if it's fire, then it's all the time, it's energy all the time, it's an expression of a constant energy. So therefore, the idea that the giving of the Torah relates to the creation of heaven and earth fits very well together, and that's the path that we're exploring at this moment. Vehine, and behold, the power that every day it should be new in your eyes, this power, nitan b'matan Torah, this power was given at the giving of the Torah. That's a tremendous thing. That you could look at the same thing again and again, you know, in the course of a person's life, and again, and then through many lives, through later generations, and it's always new. It's always something new. It's an incredible power. My uncle, Alav HaShalom, he told me that my grandmother would always give him exactly the same quarter chicken for his evening meal. And he said, it's funny. It was always wonderful. She always gave him exactly the same dish. You know, it was living in London in the middle of the... They managed to get out of Europe before the war, so they were living in London. And so there she was giving him the same meal every evening. And if there was something always... Maybe she gave it with a lot of love. It was always something special. Maybe that's part of the whole secret. The love with which God gives us the Torah, that is what makes it always a new experience. And in fact, on the night of Shavuot, we read the Tikkun Leil Shavuot, and we go through the 24 books of the Torah, and then the Mishnah, and then the 630 mitzvot. Then we come to Book of Creation, and some Zohar, and we pretty well near the end, we have a passage from Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai from the Zohar. He says, Anon v'chavivusa tal yamilsa. For us, the thing depends on love. And that really is this sense of connection with God, that God, in love, Anon nafshoi chasovis yohavis, I give myself to you. Hashem is giving himself to us, and therefore it's always new. And this special experience, this special quality of seeing it as always new, that was given at Matan Torah, at the giving of the Torah. Uch yudu b'peirush ha-kosuv, as is known in explanation of the verse, Vayadav Elokim es kol ha-dvarim ha-eleh le'emor, God spoke all these words saying, Sha-peirush t'teves le'emor, the explanation of the word saying, the pasuk there in this, right? So you have the very first line of the translation here. God spoke all these words saying. Now, what does this extra word saying mean? What's the force of that? Yes, it's at the beginning, chapter 20, number 1. God spoke all these words saying. Vayedaber Elokim es kol ha-dvarim ha-eleh le'emor. The power of this saying. Now there is an interesting discussion that's going to come over here. Shahapedish to Tevis Lema Vaposik Zeh, because the meaning of this word saying in this verse is not as usual. Huloi Lema La Acherim. It's not to tell other people Kumo Kol Lema Subamikra as it is everywhere else in the Torah. Very often God tells Moses something saying. That's a very common phrase in the Torah. And the word saying is explained that God is telling it to Moses so that Moses should tell everyone else. In other words, so it's actually not saying, but to say. Lema is the infinitive with to. So it's like to go, to say, to hear. So God told Moses, lema, to say. We translate it saying very often because it doesn't quite make sense. But God told Moses to say. So in other words, he's going to tell everyone else. That's fine. But here, it doesn't quite work like that. Because Shahari Neshamas Kol Yisrael Hayu B'Maimad HaSinai, because the souls of the entire Jewish people were there at Mount Sinai. V'Shamu HaDibris Ma'akadosh Baruch Atzmai, and they heard the Ten Commandments from God Himself. U'Pirush Lema Kan, so the word Lema must mean something else, is to say. Hushu B'Shas Matan Taira, it means as follows. And if we could absorb this, you know, if the penny of this could go in, then we'd have really got something. That at the time of the giving of the Torah, Nitan HaKoyach L'chol Echo V'Achas Mi'Yisrael, was given the power to every single Jewish man and woman, Shebechol HaDoreis, in every generation, Lemo Eskol HaDvorim Ma'ela, that each one of us, we are able to say all these words, which applies to the entire Torah, not just the Ten Commandments, to everything. That when we learn Torah, it should be in a way of lema. That we say the words which God is saying now, like at the time of the giving of the Torah. So in other words, when we are learning something, whatever it is, in the Torah, as we are learning it, God is saying it with us. God is imparting it to us at the same moment. It's a tremendously, tremendously powerful idea. It reminds me of one of the accounts during the Holocaust, that there was a group of people who they had to go in some kind of labor group. They were marched out of the camp. They were in a labor camp of some kind. They were marched out of the camp, and they had to go to a place where they would break stones or do something or other. And as they were going, there were some people in this group who knew a lot of Talmud, and they would sing a kind of song. And the person leading the song knew quite a bit of Talmud by heart. And he would say, Rava, like he would say a bit of the Talmud, and they would all answer. And it was a kind of a marching song as they were walking along, an hour or something from the camp to where they had to go in the forest or somewhere to chop wood. And so there they were saying a page of Talmud while they were going along, which, thank God, this person knew by heart. And there they were learning, from, maybe they didn't survive, but they were learning Torah at that moment in that tremendous darkness, and this was the most incredible triumph, because there they were in the gates of Mavet, in the valley of the shadow of death, and nonetheless they were together with God because they were learning Torah, they were managing to learn Torah in some way, and there, Tam Lashoni Imratecha, God is saying it with them, and that sense of that closeness to God. Shelechein, and therefore, last three lines of this paragraph, Ma la lam be'eimo b'yira v'reses of Isaiah, just as when God gave the Torah, it was tremendous awe, and it was an amazing spiritual experience. Afkan, so now, whenever a person learns Torah, it's actually an incredible experience. Val pizeh mudgash od yoyseh, and so this emphasizes even more, Ashaych ha-sin in ifchanshus l'matn Torah, the connection of the idea of the creation of the world to the giving of the Torah. Hischadshus is a word meaning creation. Chidush Olam is the idea that the world was created as something new, and so the idea of creation is summarized in this word, Hischadshus. So the connection of the idea of creation to the giving of the Torah, Kivun Shakoyach Alzeh, Shiyu Be'necha Chadoshim, since the power that the words of Torah should be new, just like there is the idea of creation, that creation is all the time something new. So the power for this Nitin B'Matan Torah was given at the giving of the Torah. V'hine, and behold, Al Pia Yedua, according to what is known, Shigam Sheila B'Torah Hi Torah, that the question in Torah is also Torah. Torah Semes, it's true. Move, and it's understood, Shazer Shemuva B'Kama Drushim, The fact that it's brought in a number of discourses in previous generations, Shahaskhala, that the beginning of Matan Torah, Hayatzolich Yosef Bliyas Shemaim Ba'aretz, should have been in the about the creation of heaven and earth, Ugama Libet Emes, is in fact a true thing. Yes, it's quite true. When God said, I am the Lord your God, there's a sense in which he's also saying, who created heaven and earth. So even though it actually says, who brought you out of Egypt, yes, you've got that whole channel, but then you've got the Torah itself asking the question, the Talmud, the commentators, and in Hasidic discourses, mystical discourses, asking the question, why not, I am God who created heaven and earth? You know what, it's that as well. There's always this multiplicity, that the question is also part of the reality. The noise of Lezesh, Ahaskolot, Kolotori, Bereshis, Bola, Lekimus, Shemaimus, Ores, because in addition to the idea that the beginning of the whole Torah is from the first words, in the beginning God created heaven and earth, the Chain, Ahaskolot, Mishneh, Torah, La Rambam, and also not only the written Torah, but the oral Torah. Now there's one book of the written, of the oral Torah, which includes all the teachings of the oral Torah. Now, of course, there's the Mishnah, and there's the Gemara, but then when you take it further, there's the Rambam. And the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, written around 1177, that is a remarkable book which includes the entire, or all the laws of the oral Torah. And in that also, he begins off with the whole concept of relationship with God. The Mishnah begins, Me'emusai Koren Eshema Ba'avis. From what time do you say the Shema in the evening? And as a great Hasidic teacher, I think it was Pinchas Koretz that explained it, me'ematai, me'ema, in from fear, from awe of me, from of God, with awe of God, you say the Shema in the evening. So it's also relating back to directly to God, and of course the Shema is about the oneness of God. But in the Rambam, he says, what is the beginning of everything? Yosoid ha-yosoidos va'amud ha-chochmos. The pillar of all pillars, and the foundation of all foundations, and the pillar of all wisdoms, Yusoid, Yud, Ha Yusoidos, Hey, V'amud, Vav, Ha Chochmas, of the wisdoms, so that is Yud Kei Vav Kei. So that is Leida, to know Sheyesha Motzi Rishon, to know that there is a first existence, who mamti kol nimtza, who brings everything into being, v'chol ha-nimtza, and everything that exists, lo nimtza elem amitis imotza, only exists because of the truth of God's existence. So in other words, there, in the oral Torah, we also have the idea of God creating and giving existence to the world. Eilu shagam kol shakol ha-nimtza, nimtza ma'amitis imotza. It's saying, one second, Ula Hoysef, and to add, alright, there's a whole interesting section over here, but I think that we should miss that out. Let's go, it's quite a few lines down, it's two lines from the bottom. Hine Noisef Lezer, so in addition to that, so we've got the written Torah and we've got the oral Torah, both beginning off with the concept of God creating heaven and earth. In addition, Gam Ba'ascholos to Matan Torah, also at the beginning of Matan, of the giving of the Torah, Yeshna Inyan Debrir Shemaim Bo'aretz, we have the idea of creation, Elish Inyan Zeu Ba'achelik de Tedish Ba'opeh. But the idea of creation at the beginning of the giving of the Ten Commandments is in the Oral Torah, the Vaposik Rishon to Matan Torah, that the first verse of Matan Torah, HaPerush to Tedish Ba'ksav, commenting on the written Torah, on the first verse of Matan Torah. So in other words, the oral Torah in its question, that is creation within the Ten Commandments. You've got the Ten Commandments, and you've got a question about it. That question is part of the Ten Commandments as well. And it's a very interesting thing, that the question is part of the Torah. You see, there's the Torah, what the Torah is telling you, and then there's the question about the Torah. And that question is also part of the Torah. Because sometimes it's the question which opens the door so that you're able to see the Torah within. And that's why the whole mode of Torah teaching is by questions and answers, and another question, another answer. And the whole Talmud, it's always asking questions. There's a statement, then a question. One can suggest the explanation of this is that when we study Torah in such a way that it's always new, we reveal what is new about existence, that it's being renewed at every moment, from nothing to something. So in other words, if we learn Torah and we are sensitive to the life of the Torah and the way the Torah is all the time an expression of this divine life force and this divine communication to us, then when we look with those same eyes at the world around us, we'll see godliness. We won't just see an ordinary static world. We'll see a world which is vibrant with divine energy, which is all the time flowing into it and making it exist. And according to what we said about the word to say, saying, or to say at the beginning of the giving of the Torah, he is imparting the power to us to see Torah in a new way, that through this is revealed also what is new about creation. That means that in the very beginning of Matan Torah, even before the Ten Commandments, there is the idea of the chidush, the newness of creation. So in other words, there is the what is being imparted to us at the giving of the Torah is the sight which enables us to see existence as all the time an expression of the divine, as we were learning last night in chapter 36 of Tanya, because there in chapter 36 of Tanya it says that at the giving of the Torah they suddenly were able to see existence all around them as an expression of godliness. And so that ties in very, very well with what it's saying over here, that the tremendous power of contact with the divine that took place at the giving of the Torah means both a total contact with the Torah and every word of Torah from then on having this vibrant, radiant quality, and also the physical world that you look at also being transparent to godliness. You could say one level is translucent to godliness and another level is transparent to godliness. Except that even though the question seems so suitable, the actual beginning of Matan Torah Begilui in the revealed way in the written Torah, He Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God, Asher Tzeisich Meretz Yitzrayim, who took you out of the land of Egypt. So in fact, we come back to the fact that the Torah does say that it's I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt. Ki hakavona debriyas oilam, because the purpose of the creation of the world, or the Matan Torah, and of the giving of the Torah, who b'shvil Yisrael, is for the sake of the Jewish people and what they have to achieve for the world as a whole and for all existence. As they zon durchgehen ha'inyan de Mitzrayim, goes into Yiddish, that they should go through, they should experience, they should enter, go through this whole idea of Egypt, meloshen meitzer ugvul, and Egypt meaning limitation, and that they should go out of all limitations. I've taken you out of the land of Egypt, and I've even taken you out of the house of bondage, that they should be completely beyond any kind of servitude of any kind. Because God says the Jewish people are slaves to me. Li, to me, that means to the very essence of God, who shtari kaidem, my document comes first, so to speak, says God, and therefore we are always free. We are always free. Now, before I quoted an incident from the Holocaust, from Rabbi Ephraim Oshry's book, The Holocaust and Halachon, and here is another quote from that book. This is talking about Kovno, the ghetto which was in Kovno. And they were alive in the ghetto. They were being killed. People were being killed. But at this moment, whoever was alive, they were there, and they had synagogues. And in the synagogue, there is the chazan who is leading the prayers, and the normal Ashkenaz custom is that he says at the beginning of the prayers there's a list of blessings that are said aloud. And one of the blessings is, blessed are you, Lord our God, who did not create me a slave. Shaloya Sami Ovid, who didn't make me into a slave. And the chazan suddenly began crying out, how can I say this blessing? Blessed are you, O God, who didn't make me a slave. We are slaves. We're slaves to the Germans. They kill us, they beat us, they do what they like to us. We're slaves. And he didn't want to say that line in the prayer. And it came to the attention of the rabbi. And the rabbi gave him a whole thing. We are not slaves. We're not slaves at all. Even though the Nazis have control over our bodies, and they kill us indeed, and they beat us, they do terrible things to us, we are actually free. We are free, and we are only slaves to God. We are servants of God, and in every other respect, we are totally free. And that sense of freedom, that is a key concept in our whole relationship with God and with Torah. The Yesh Lakash is there. So there's four lines up from the end of this paragraph, and this can be connected to Me'inyin Shematan Torah La'achrish Shekzim Yisrael Nasil Nishma. This can be connected to the idea that the giving of the Torah on the 6th of Sivan was after the Jewish people first said, Naseh, we will do and then we will hear, which was on the 5th of Sivan. The Hagam Shagila de Matan Torah Hori Mitzad Lamaila, that even though the revelation of the giving of the Torah was coming from above, from God, Vani Amashil, God is so to speak beginning, he is giving us this input of the Torah, nonetheless, Hoyetzarich Liyos Tchila, there first of all had to be at the beginning, Hakdomas Naisel the Nishma, first we had to say Naseh and then Nishma, we will do and only afterwards we will hear. Habitul Lebal HaRotzen, which means our self-surrender, our self-abnegation to the author of the will. There's the will of the Torah, there's the will of God, and there's the author of the will, the owner of the will, God. And we give ourselves over to God. And it's through us giving ourselves over to God that we get the Torah. V'al yedei zeh dafka, through that specifically, nitna ha-Torah v'nimshocha me'atzmus, the Torah was given, the Torah was drawn from the essence of God, koilel gam ha-nesinus koyach shehayu b'Torah, including also this tremendous transmission of power that there was in the giving of the Torah, lema, that whenever we study Torah, we're able to have this sense or this inner reality of God saying the words of Torah with us, shebechol yom yuvenecha chadoshim, that every single day whenever we study Torah it is new, and that this is something which then affects the way in which we see existence as well, so that we're able to see the divine quality in existence. And then the Rebbe continues, that these things, these days are remembered and are re-experienced. And this is spoken about in various earlier books, that whenever we celebrate a festival, it's a re-experience and a reenactment of the whole event. And so therefore the festival of Shavuos for us is again a repeat of the whole concept of the giving of the Torah with all its aspects. Us giving ourselves over to God, God giving himself over to us, our recognition that Torah is the essence of godliness, and that wherever we study Torah, it is there. We are in contact with the essence of godliness, and God is saying the Torah with us, and that leading to our perception of reality and of existence as an expression of the divine. So that's basically this discourse. In a nutshell, it then goes on it then expands further. We've only read something like a quarter of the discourse, but it's but this is the central thing. So I wish everyone a very happy Chag HaShavuot in every way, and we should really experience this in shul on Friday if we're able to get there and hear the Ten Commandments, and to be able to experience this. Precisely this, that we have got the tremendous spiritual energy in us, is able to receive this divine input there at hearing the Ten Commandments and whenever we study Torah. question.